This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. And on today's show, we're going to turn the tables and go down under. I'm going to introduce you to Simon Van Vick. And Simon is the managing director of a company in Sydney called Regional Media Networks. And I've actually been on his podcast. Simon does a podcast called the Hot House Interactive Podcast. And he's done it for, near on 2 years. I had the pleasure about a year ago of being on his show, and he's here in Los Altos visiting me in the studio. And what we're going to do is actually have Simon do his show live on my show. And so Simon is going to interview me, and it's going to be a best of Dishy Mix that he's going to take back to Australia with him. And I thought you might enjoy this show as well. So it's a show in a show nested.
It's a real challenge for marketers, isn't it, the search environment, because it's so much noisier now than it used to be, almost in every category.
Well, that's what Ellen Siminoff said. She said, as you noted, that there are a lot of global campaigns now. You know, you used to do a campaign for MSN and one for Google, and you were kind of done. And now, not only are they global campaigns, but they're also campaigns where different business units in the organization have different business objectives and different keywords, and so all of it's gotten more complex. The number one thing that I've noticed people saying, all the blogging experts and the social media experts, is that a corporate blog is probably the very best and first thing that most companies can and should do to put their toe in the water of the conversational marketing or social media space. Where you put your name in LinkedIn, also put your email address in the namespace. So that if someone doesn't have your email, but they want to connect with you, they can get your email address and just send you the request. So when marketing as conversation becomes a keyword for me or a key phrase for me, I start thinking about not only how am I going to get involved in the conversation, but how am I going to track the conversation that's happening around my brand that I'm not involved in. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you, Susan.
It's so great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
You came on vacation and we put you to work.
Yeah, I've done the Montana trip and now I'm down in San Francisco.
That's great. All right. Well, we're going to get the show started and you're going to take over and the tables are turned. I'm going to be the guest of the show today. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Here we go.
Hi, I'm Simon Van Vick, and today I'm interviewing Susan Bratton in her studio in San Francisco. Susan is, without doubt, Interactive Industries' most connected woman. She's been part of the industry from the very beginning, the mid-90s. She's definitely shaped the way the industry's developed and has been a pragmatic operator who definitely walks the walk. She's been very candid about her life, and she found herself in her 40s. Like me, she loves Burning Man and rediscovered her marriage a few years ago. She's authentic, interesting, talented, and people really like her for good reason. As a result, she's one of the best connected people in the internet. She runs Personal Life Media, a network for the cultural creatives, and conducts a weekly interview with some of the industry's most interesting and creative thinkers. And really, that's what I wanted to focus on today, Susan. The things you've learned from all the interviews you've done over the past couple of years. Most of the people who listen to this Hot House podcast are marketing people, and they're really looking for help and advice, and I think some of the people you've talked to certainly have candid advice for these people. So where I thought we'd start is with search. We're always telling our clients now that Google is really the homepage, and you have to think about your website from that point. And you've talked to people like Ellen Siminoff of Efficient Frontiers, it really talked about how search is global now and much more complex. John Battelle, obviously, who wrote the Google book. Stephen Spencer, who talked about SEO and SEM and how search engine optimization people make the best social marketers. And then Danny Sullivan, what are your takeouts from all of those conversations about search and your advice for marketers?
Well, I think there are always tidbits I learn from everybody. One of the things that Stephen Spencer talked about that I thought was really helpful was he has an expertise in blog visibility. So if you're writing a blog, how do you get a lot of traffic to your blog? Now, he has a post about SEO blog mistakes, all the things that you're not doing right. And since it's a blog post, I recommend that everybody just go read that. Just Google Stephen Spencer from Net Concepts and blog mistakes, and you'll find that it's very popular. And in reality, what he's doing is actually something that he talks about on the show called link baiting. And link bait, as he describes it, something that you write that everybody wants to point to, some definitive piece of information. And as a matter of fact, I just wrote on my blog the 12 considerations for social media using his model, hoping that many people would link to that story as link bait. So that was one of the things I learned. I also learned from Danny Sullivan that Google and others are moving more toward a blended search capability. Now, when you go to Google, you'll notice that instead of it just being the organic results, you're getting maps, you're getting local information, you're getting a lot more things woven into the results. And he says that marketers actually need to change their strategy, the whole way that they're managing search, to think about the new blended results. And if they're optimizing for their keywords and their phrases in the blended results, that are the way the world works now.
Because it's a real challenge for marketers, isn't it? The search environment, because it's so much noisier now than it used to be, almost in every category.
Well, that's what Ellen Siminoff said. She said, as you noted, that there are a lot of global campaigns now. You know, you used to do a campaign for MSN and one for Google, and you were kind of done. And now, not only are they global campaigns, but they're also campaigns where different business units in the organization have different business objectives and different keywords. And so all of it's gotten more complex. Yeah.
And manufacturers are actually, in some respects, competing with their distributors in the search space. And that's a real challenge for the average marketer.
Absolutely. Yeah, right. The channel conflict of the search space, that's for sure. And you mentioned something too, Simon, when we were talking and preparing for the show. You said the thing that John Battelle said that struck you was how Google is not a media company. And would you talk about that thing you were just saying to me? Because I thought that was really insightful.
Well, I was fascinated. A friend of mine was just telling me that the search traffic to the automotive category had dropped by 20%. And it's kind of obvious because people are just not buying cars anymore. But John points out that media is a cyclical industry. And I don't think anyone, I certainly didn't, thought of Google as being subject to those same cycles, but as a media company they are, and the fact that people aren't buying cars like they were just means people aren't searching for cars on Google, and that traffic has dropped, and so their revenue from that category is going to drop, and that's an enormous change for a company like that that's never really had a bad day in the last 10 years.
Yeah. John does a whole treatise on the things Google needs to do to think like a media company. That was a good part of the episode.
Since we're talking about blogs, in Australia we've just started to see a few brave companies start with blogs, but really a lot of large organisations are not quite sure where to start. And I think you've got some of the same issues here. I mean, I see some of the same discussion. And you've interviewed many people, Seth Godin, I mean, John Battelle with his network of blogs of Federated Media. Andy Beal had a lot of insights for companies looking to promote themselves to bloggers. And this whole space is a new challenge for marketers. It's so different to anything they're used to. What have you learned from your people about getting a blog started, things to worry about, things not to worry about, how to drive traffic?
The number one thing that I've noticed people saying, all the blogging experts and the social media experts, is that a corporate blog is probably the very best and first thing that most companies can and should do to put their toe in the water of the conversational marketing or social media space. And I've heard some good ideas recently about how to do that. One was make sure that more than one person in the organization is participating in the corporate blog. Two, establish an editorial calendar and a specific date or each week or specific time each week that a blog post goes live so that it's kind of baked into the calendars of the people responsible so that you don't get blog fade. The other thing that I heard that was a good idea recently was to have your customers blog on your corporate blog for you. There are a lot of customers who use products and services in unique ways that can create some good ideas. And so it doesn't just have to come from within the company. That was another really good idea that I heard. So it continues to be a very important part of moving from push-based advertising to connecting with your customer using these web tools. And you talked about some of the people on the show. One of them was Seth Godin, his book, Meatball Sunday. We've talked about the fact that some of Seth's books were, as I think you called it, a little bit light or trite or something. Meatball Sunday was good, really good if you're trying to embrace the new internet marketing. He said that bloggers are the new gatekeepers and that bloggers have often attract a larger audience than print publications now. Andy Beal gave some really good advice on the show that he did. He wrote a book called Radically Transparent, and he gives these really specific pieces of information like this way to find your most aligned targets for bloggers. If you're going to do a press outreach and you want to connect with bloggers and brief them about your company's products or services or whatever it might be, he talks about getting blog site traffic from compete.com, getting a vibe for the citations or the level of respect a blogger engenders from traditional media by checking to see if they've ever been quoted in Google News, because they might not have the most traffic, but they might be a real pundit that has some influence for you. He talks about using Google search to see which bloggers rank for your target keywords and phrases. He says check the number of inbound links a blogger gets and from whom they get those links on Yahoo's Site Explorer. And then, of course, you can check on the authority of bloggers in Technorati. So he uses a lot of web tools to kind of look at many bloggers and then zero in on the ones that are the best profile for his company's target message. That was a really densely packed interview with a lot of good points, and that book is excellent. John Battelle talks a lot in his interview about how you build conversations between bloggers and readers and some of the ad campaigns they've done on blogging sites that are very clever. So that's a good one as well. So those would, I say, be some of the top things that I've learned about the world of blogging from some of my guests.
Actually, I agree with that. And the point you made at the beginning that the blog is actually the starting point of an organization's involvement in some kind of social marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a blog with a central point at which a company puts out its message in the voice it chooses, in the tone it chooses, where the organization correctly brands itself, I don't see how any organization can embark on social marketing without that central place out of which they start those conversations.
Yeah, it's like they have to have their own online personality that goes beyond just what their website looks like.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny, too. That reminded me of another interview I did with Rohit Bhargava. He wrote a book called Personality Not Included. And one of the things he said was that a lot of times your corporate website doesn't have much personality, but your corporate blog actually can through its the humanizing effect of the people in the organization and the things that they write create some more personality around your brand. And he says it's not about authenticity. It actually goes much beyond that to the personality of your corporation. And where's that come from? You know, you can have agencies create personality for brands, but ultimately, it's probably still a reflection of the people and their values and what they bring to the table.
Yeah, and that's what the customers are buying, isn't it? The personality of the company.
It is. Absolutely. Hey, Simon, do you mind if we take a break right now? I'd like to thank my sponsors.
Not at all.
All right, good. So I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and I'm with Simon Van Vijk, and he is with Hot House Interactive Podcasts, and he's the managing director of Regional Media Networks out of Sydney, Australia. And I'm your host, Susan Bratton, getting the tables turned on my bad self, and we're going to go thank my sponsors. As you know, I dearly love them. So stay tuned. Stay with us. We've got more things to cover, and I'll be right back with Simon.
Listen to Money, Mission, and Meaning. Passion at Work, Purpose at Play. A weekly audio program bringing you success in the business of life on personallifemedia.com.
All right, we're back, and it's Susan with Simon Van Vaik. And we're going to talk some more about social marketing, marketing as conversation, ROI, all kinds of good stuff when Simon interviews me about the best of Dishy Mix. Let's rock it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about social marketing. You've interviewed a lot of people, the Justin Smith from one of your latest interviews from Facebook, Stefan Spencer, who made some interesting points about social media PR. Highly entertaining Peter Shankman. Again, John Battelle's advice for B2B marketers about using social marketing. And of course, Charlene Lee and the Groundswell book, because I think Forrester have got some really pragmatic views on this whole space. And also the most entertaining Mark Cantor interview, but most particularly his Bud TV explanation. Let's talk a little bit about social marketing and what because most organizations now are looking for a way into social marketing for something to do. And for a lot of them, it's got to be something more than just posting a video on YouTube or your TV commercial on YouTube. What have you learned from all of those thinkers?
Well, it's funny that you say more than just posting a video on YouTube, because one of the things Mark Cantor said, you brought him up, he's a hoot and a half, as we would say out here in the West. Cantor said that whole Anheuser-Busch cable television channel that they created for Bud TV was a complete waste of time, and they actually would have been better off putting those shows on YouTube. So I'm not sure that we're beyond YouTube yet at this point. And one of the things I see here that people are doing is creating content and then doing almost promotional videos that they place up on YouTube to draw the traffic and the interest. So everyone knows trying to have a viral marketing show is almost impossible, but at least they can use video to promote content.
Yeah, because viral, it seems to me, is not a strategy. It's a lottery. I mean,
oh, that's well put. Not a strategy, a lottery. I like that.
Because how does any major marketer run a viral campaign and hope to get a return? Sometimes they do, but most of the time they don't.
Yeah, that's not a deal I'd want to take.
Mm-hmm. And that, I suppose, is why Charlene Lee and the people at Forrester have really given marketers a set of really good tools that they can use and think through. What did you get out of your interviews with Charlene?
Well, here's what I would do. I would just point people to her book, Groundswell. And in the book, I think the best part of it is that she actually goes through some ROI calculations. She shows you how you can actually guesstimate the value of the time spent doing a corporate blog, just to come, you know, full circle to the corporate blog thing. If you're trying to sell that into your client or into your CEO and they're not buying, there's a really good worksheet that you can do to estimate the actual value of doing that work. And that's what I would recommend from the Charlene piece.
Because they did a lot of work for General Motors, didn't they, around that General Motors blog and the value to the organization of that.
Yeah, and GM was smart. They were early on, so they got a lot of cred for that, and they got a ton of publicity for it, too. I think that there's so much value in being a first mover in these kinds of new medium, because the press that you get alone can be a tremendous value, that earned media.
But the one thing that struck me about the General Motors blog and some of the people you've talked about was that I remember reading it really early in the piece, and the guy had been down to a trade show and he looked at one of the cars that had come through the design studio, and he'd gone, I liked it when it was in the design studio, but when I saw it at the trade show, I wasn't quite sure we'd hit the mark. I think it was the Thunderbird. And
yeah, I don't think they hit the mark with it. It really didn't come out well, did it? It's like a junky little toy, didn't it?
No, it's really weird.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a really authentic comment, and I'm sure that's what got engagement.
Yeah. That's true. You know, there were a couple of other pieces to that whole social marketing thing. You talked about Peter Shankman. I was just with him in Boulder at the Aloha Social Media Summit. Obviously, the first one was in Hawaii, and then we did one in Boulder. And we did this really fun exercise where we got the whole room together, and we talked about your personal versus your professional online persona. In the world of the social web, now people are posting their pictures of their vacation in Montana on the Dude Ranch, and yet they work for corporations. And where do you draw the line? And we actually created a discussion and came up with 12 considerations before you begin dabbling in social media. Think about who you are. And what personas you need to hold online, and what are some of the rules of the road? And I posted that on the Dishy Mix blog, and that might be something that people would enjoy checking out. The other one that you mentioned was Justin Smith. Now, that's a brand new interview. He writes an ebook called The Facebook Marketing Bible. And you know how Facebook just redid their whole design? Mm-hmm. And so it's like the new Facebook now? Well, there are a lot of new ad formats and marketer opportunities that were never there before. And my recommendation is that, A, you buy and download the Facebook Marketing Bible, because Justin, if you buy it in subscription, he updates it every 30 or 60 days. And listen to the podcast while you're in front of your computer. And he talks about all the different ad formats that you can potentially get involved with as a marketer. And what's the difference between a fan club and a Facebook page and a group and a personal profile. And so almost being able to get a guided tour of Facebook from the guy that wrote the Bible on Facebook marketing, that's a really good just overview of how it all works, because it's changed. And then the other thing that was helpful on LinkedIn was Stefan Spencer. He gave 3 or 4 really good tips about what you can do in LinkedIn to increase your connections. For example, I'll give you some of them now, so not everybody has to go to every show and listen to them. He said, where you put your name in LinkedIn, also put your email address in the namespace. So that if someone doesn't have your email, but they want to connect with you, they can get your email address and just send you the request. He also said, connect with a lion. Have you ever heard of LinkedIn lion?
Do you know what that is? I haven't.
I think it's called something like a LinkedIn open networker. And these are the people that have, connections to 5 or 10 or 20,000 people. And if you link to one of those lions that's kind of tangentially in your field, in your area, then you have access to all those people that he's connected through, and it makes your network get a lot bigger, faster, to be able to do maybe 1 or 2 hops to someone that you'd like to meet. And then the third thing that he said was, when you're in LinkedIn and you're filling out your profile, you can actually make links to all your blogs and your web pages, and those inbound links are really valuable, and they can actually be your URLs that you put right in there. So that's another way that you can, on a personal and professional level, increase your Google rankings and things like that. So those were some of the tidbits I learned in the kind of the social media world that I thought were helpful from my Dishy Mix guests.
The whole concept of marketing now being a conversation, the David Weinberger Clue Train Manifest, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, we in our industry are so glib with that term because we've lived with it for a long time.
Yeah.
And most of us understand it. But I'm not sure that the average marketing executive actually really does understand what marketing as a conversation means.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see marketing as a conversation meaning now, and how's that changed from the way marketing was even 5 years ago?
Well, a couple things. One, we have gone from scheduling our media and kind of blasting it out to everyone, blasting our ad campaigns and our marketing messages out to consumers through consumer-generated content, being able to have their own voice on the web be potentially equal to all of the work that we can do as marketers. So that lone voice. One of the guests that I had on was Pete Blackshaw, and he wrote a book that is, it has a very long title, but it's the short name of the book is Tell 3000. And the, I'm going to butcher the name of the book, but it was something like a happy customer tells three people about your brand and an angry customer tells 3,000. So the marketing as conversation is two things. One, as marketers, instead of buying measured media and blasting it out to our customers, go where our customers are having the conversations and get involved with those conversations. Discussions, social networks, message boards, other places like that. And then the second thing is understanding and knowing your online reputation and tracking very closely what customers are saying about you. Andy Beal, the guy that wrote Radically Transparent, he has a product that I just signed up for called Tracker, T-R-A-C-K-U-R. I don't get any money for any of this stuff, by the way. I'm a champion. What I did, I used to use Google Alerts to track all the keywords, you know, my vanity, Susan Bratton, Google Alert, and personal life media, and all those things. But I was tracking so many that I was getting a ton of email. What Tracker does is essentially track more than even Google does, because they track my blog logs, blog lines, Twitter, all kinds of things that Google's not tracking yet. So they can measure the conversation and the buzz that's out in the market about your brand. And then they roll it all up into a single digest so that all the words you're tracking come to you. You know, just you can go to the site and get them, or you can get them in a digest in your email so you can see what the latest things are that are being tracked about your brand. So when marketing as conversation becomes a keyword for me or a key phrase for me, I start thinking about not only how am I going to get involved in the conversation, but how am I going to track the conversation that's happening around my brand that I'm not involved in. And I like Tracker for that. That works really well.
Yeah, because I think we've tried to explain to our customers that there was a time when marketers had databases of their customers.
Yeah.
But now their customers are going to have databases of the companies that they want to deal with.
And right.
I think that's the fundamental shift, and getting in the way, getting for a company to get on that database is getting harder and harder.
Well, like the fan badges, you know, now you can be a fan of a brand on Facebook and their badge, their logo is on your Facebook page. So that's exactly what that is. That's a database of the brands that you care about. A showcase. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk numbers a little, because every marketer wants to talk about return on investment now. And the interactive industries kind of championed return on investment. And it's funny now, because I see a lot of people trying to talk about branding now instead of return on investment, which I think is odd. But you interviewed Rex Briggs, who's, I think, one of the most articulate measurers of things digital. He's been to Australia many times, and he's the one guy that nails it for me, because he's just really clear about what we're measuring, how we're measuring it, and what a return on investment is. And you also talked to Sean Chaney, who had some really interesting things to say about how he improved ROI of an insurance company he was working for. What's your take out from all of those people around this particular topic of return on investment?
Well, Rex Briggs is brilliant, and I also love how he speaks to an audience. He's kind of like an evangelical preacher, you know. He gets down off the stage and gets right out in there with you. And so if you ever have an opportunity to hear him present, it's like mad scientist meets evangelical preacher with bright red shoes, you know. He's got such a personality, doesn't he?
And the marketers love it, because all they want to hear is numbers.
Well, who doesn't? Mm. Exactly. Everything should be quantified now. Well, so he has this thing he calls ROMO. It's return on marketing objective. And, you know, Rex is really famous for doing those cross-media surveys and research reports. When the internet was just coming to the fore here in the States, we needed to show that there was a place for interactive on the media buy, because we were trying to move the traditional media dollars out of the, you know, traditional and into the internet. And Rex came up with Daron Wesley, who's also been on my show, and other people, Greg Stewart, with this idea that we should measure the value of the synergistic approach to media. And so I would recommend anyone who's trying to, and knows in their gut that they need to have more online media spend because that's where all the eyeballs have gone, but they're kind of still stuck in the, you know, the rote process of their company and the historical way of doing things, or the fiefdoms and silos that can't be broken down. To look at what Rex has done with cross media, where he'll do a control and test and test, okay, this is where we've done just print and online, or this is where we've done television and print with no online. Now, when we add online, what is the return on our marketing objective? What's the uptick in the total value of the campaign and the revenue generated by having a mix that models in interactive? And when he talks about ROMO, the return on the marketer's objective, he's also talking about measuring some things that are even less tangible than actual sales. Sometimes it's engagement or mind share, or, you know, getting beyond just things like purchase intent and other pieces of the traditional ad effectiveness research. So he's worth listening to and also worth reading. He has a book. He has great white papers on his website, which is Marketing Evolution. And it's very helpful if you're in a more traditional company as well.
And I think for me, the thing that came out of his and out of Sean Chaney's was just that this is a long-term thing, and you've got to, because you can measure it, you can do it step by step, you can do it over a period of time, and you can eke those returns out over a long period of time by just understanding what it is you're measuring and trying to make changes to impact what it is that you're measuring.
Well, yeah, Sean Chaney, you know, he works at AccuQuote.com. It's an insurance broker, and he lives and dies by the leads that he delivers as the CMO to his salespeople. And he's big on Omniture, I think it is. That's the kind of the web analytics company that he has plugged in all over his website, so he can really watch, hey, someone lands on my homepage. Do they, you know, do they get through the quote process? Where are they going? What are they doing? All the cow pathing. But he's doing a ton of multivariate testing on landing pages because he has to get people to fill out a form so that that can generate the lead for salespeople. And so he'll have something like, I think he said, 230 iterations of a landing page with all these little nuanced changes to see which ones actually, from a design and user interface perspective, convert the most good leads for him, not just leads, but the leads that actually convert to paying customers, not just tire kickers. And I like that whole piece of the A-B testing or the multivariate testing.
Yeah, I liked it too, because that is the end of the line for our industry is measuring things and showing a return.
Absolutely.
Anyway, finally, look, the most important thing about all of these, because I know you like to finish on a personal note.
Uh-oh.
You
snuck this one in on me, didn't you?
Yeah. Look, you've been really candid about the fact that you rediscovered your marriage and rebuilt a relationship with Tim, who's your business partner. But also you've interviewed some of the world's greatest thinkers. And for me, the Ken Robinson one was one of the most memorable. Mm. So out of all of those people that you've interviewed, what's the most personal and important takeaway that you've got out of that from all the people you've interviewed?
Yeah, Sir Ken Robinson is an amazing man. And that's a great interview. It's actually my number one most downloaded interview of all the interviews I've ever done.
And it's a very early days one, too.
It is. It really, he has staying power. He really talks about the need for revamping our education system and how we need to evoke more creativity in our students. And it's funny because I just also interviewed Marcus Buckingham, and he's written this new book. You just bought it too, The Truth About You, which is, he calls it the Strengths Revolution, which is working with your strengths and just basically just completely ignore the things you don't do well. Try not to even do them. Get somebody else to do them and make your strengths even better and better and better. And I just love that whole world of strengths, the Strength Finder 2.0 book, where you get to learn what some of your key strengths are. All those things are really fun, and I like to see what my guests' strengths are, but the thing that I would say that I've noticed in doing now close to 100 interviews in the last year, I would say it's been a year and a half, about 100 interviews, I would say that what I notice is that these creme de la creme of the thinkers and leaders in the digital media, marketing, and Web 2.0 world have no regrets. And I still have regrets. Regrets of saying stupid things. Almost every day I say something stupid. I think about things that I could have or should have done in my past. And to a person, when I ask them, because I ask them questions like, okay, what's the worst fork in the road you've ever taken? What was your worst decision you've ever made? And they all say, yeah, well, you know, I've made some bad decisions, but I'm actually really glad I did. I have no regrets. Always take the risk. Do it. And that is the thing I try to keep in mind, because I am interviewing the winners. And that's what I see.
Actually, I think that's true. We were talking about it earlier. Mm-hmm. I think the only regrets I've had are where I didn't make a decision. And the decisions you make, whether for good or for bad, or I'll never regret those.
Well, I think it's been a really good decision to do this show together.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it too. I've enjoyed it, Susan, and I've been a listener. I've been a listener from the beginning, and it was very easy for me to prepare for this because I'd been through all of those things. Every couple of days I go to the gym and I listen to one of your Dishy Mix things and from Australia, and I've enjoyed it and passed it on to many people. So I'd really like to thank you for your time and thank you for being part of this today.
Well, I appreciate you listening because it's a labor of love and I enjoy it so much, and I'm glad you do too. Thank you, Simon.
Well, we can tell it's a labor of love. Thanks, Susan.
Well, that's it then. So thank you all so much for tuning into Dishy Mix. I hope you enjoyed our episode with Simon today. I want to encourage you to join the Dishy Mix Facebook fan club, where I give away all kinds of goodies, like lots of the books that we talked about on today's show. And I'd love it if you'd fill out my listener survey. I want to know what you think. It's survey.personallifemedia.com. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you next week.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.